What's up?
And I'm your host, Spencer Latu. And for today's show, we are speaking truth to power about fascism. But before we get to all that, I would like to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the unceded territory of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. And rather than keeping this as a tokenistic gesture to the Indigenous peoples of Canada, as is generally done on UBC's campus, we will keep the Indigenous struggle for self-determination and justice at the forefront of our consciousness. We will begin the show and every show until there is justice for Indigenous people talking about colonialism. So, as we discussed last week, Canada was formed as a colony meant to exploit the land and Indigenous peoples. But also, over time, Canada itself has become a neo-colonial nation. And we talked a bit about what Canada has been up to abroad, mainly Canada's support of the military coup d'etat in Honduras. Today, we are going to take a look at the links between fascism and colonialism through an article written by Mallory Nye, posted December 31st, 2016 on Medium, titled "The Brutal Friendship Between Colonialism and Fascism: Some Thoughts from Amy Césaire on Systemic Racism." So, before we get into colonialism and fascism, we got to discuss what is fascism. So, I think it's best to describe it with the nine factors of fascism. So there's nine factors to look for. And unfortunately, we're getting close to checking off all the boxes here in Canada. In the United States, they're very close. And as we'll get to later in the show, Brazil can check off all the boxes because they elected a literal fascist. So nine factors. First factor, right wing. So they are on the conservative end of the spectrum, obviously regressive kind of thinking, big into, well, I guess this ties into the second point, nationalism. So they're big nationalists. They believe that the state, especially where they're from, has almost a mythic tie to them, and that they have a tie to the land, and that they are the sworn protectors of that land. And even worse, they could also create some racial division. Visions, as we saw in Germany, they were very racist and at the same time nationalist. So number three, hierarchical, just like our current society is ordered in a hierarchy, our hierarchy is based on wealth. Just like in fascism, it's basically a super hierarchy where the country is completely organized in a hierarchical manner. Anti-equality. Obviously, there will not be the same rights for men and women, as you can see, as you can study in the history of Nazi Germany. Religiosity is big in fascism. So they, once again, they have a mythic tie, as in they create myths and crazy ideas about where they came from and where they're going, hence the Thousand Year Reich in Nazi Germany. Six, they are capitalists and always will be, and which is, some people will argue that fascism is the dying stage of capitalism. Seven, war. They're big into attacking other countries and using military violence to achieve their means. Eight, it's a voluntarist ideology. And so what that means is that they believe that there is complete free will of people on a philosophical level, but through action, you can create a new reality. And so what that means is that if you can kill, say, a group of people such as Jews during the Holocaust, that you can do all the things that you say you're doing because you're doing them. So when you say that killing all the Jews, cleansing German society of Jewish people will make a better German society, thus they prove themselves right by killing Jews. So as you can see, this is a really disgusting and crazy ideology, but one that should be taken seriously as we get to real world examples. But I feel like it's still important to lay the foundations of what these topics are, and anti-modern. So that's the last one to look after. They hate the arts, they hate fine arts, and they try to push all those creative people underground, as once again you can see that in Nazi Germany. So, from the article, the French Martinique writer, poet, and politician Amy Césaire commented in 1955 that there is a very close link between the colonies and the colonizers, and that colonization brutalizes the colonizer. We are going to quote from Césaire's Discourse on Civilization. It begins, "First, we must study how colonization works to decivilize the colonizer, to brutalize him in the true sense of the word, to degrade him, to awaken him to buried instincts, to covetousness, violence, race hatred, and moral relativism. And we must show that each time a head is cut off or an eye put out in Vietnam and in France. So this is an example of French imperialism, but if we imagine a Canadian, we could just pretend Honduras. They accept the fact each time a little girl is raped, and in, I'll replace France with Canada, and in Canada, they accept the fact each time a Honduran is tortured, and in Canada, they accept the fact civilization acquires another dead weight. A universal regression takes place. A gangrene sets in. A center of infection begins to spread. And that at the end of all these treatises that have been violated, all these lies that have been propagated, all these punitive expeditions that have been tolerated, all these prisoners who have been tied up and interrogated, all these patriots who have been tortured, at the end of all the racial pride that has been encouraged, all the boastfulness that has been displayed, a poison has been instilled into the veins of North America, and slowly but surely the continent proceeds towards savagery. So I'll take a break in this passage to say that as far as the brutalization of the colonized by Canada and the especially looking at Indigenous people within Canada is a pretty easy example.
Right.
It's definitely you can see the parallels already, and especially with this whole the torture and interrogation, racial pride kind of thing. So we already have people who are targeted by the state. All the people in America that were tortured in Guantanamo Bay, the human rights abuses there, and the excesses by the imperialists. Ajit, do you draw any parallels to Canadian society or North American society at large from this kind of definition of colonialism and fascism?
Yeah, I mean, if we just reference back the article we discussed last week, the main point that a lot of the people, politicians, journalists who really favor this sort of, you know, who are bought into this capitalist framework, their whole argument was that it would be beneficial for us economically. And I mean, that is the most direct parallel, I guess you could say, about capitalism, or sorry, colonialism, because from my understanding, studying it in a British context, it was just the, how would you say, the transplanting of their extremely unequal capitalist society onto other less developed societies, but to an nth degree, because mm-hmm. those people were of different racial composition. Mm-hmm. You know, they were large, much bigger in population in many instances. I mean, India's the best example, right? You can just look at that. And in Canada, it happens on a micro scale because, you know, we kind of came into our own in the international sphere when colonialism in the more traditional sense was dying down. But, you know, neocolonialism has thrives, you know, to this day. So, you know, that's just a direct parallel. You know, mm-hmm. if it fits our profit motive, there's no need to really discern about the atrocities that average people have to face in those countries because it's out of mind, out of sight.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, and you know, building off that out of mind, out of sight point, it regardless, because civilization accepts it and the Canadian society accepts it, it creates a more regressive society
right.
for it. As we're constantly engaged in violence abroad, it turns into violence at home. And I think this next little bit really sums it all up pretty nicely. So back to Aimé Césaire, he writes, "And then one fine day, the bourgeoisie is awakened by a terrific reverse shock. The Gestapos are busy. The prisons fill up. The torturers around the racks invent, refine, discuss. People are surprised. They become indignant. They say, 'How strange!' But never mind. It's Nazism. It will pass." And they wait and they hope and they hide the truth from themselves that it is barbarism. But the supreme barbarism, the crowning barbarism that sums up all the daily barbarisms. That it is Nazism, yes. But that before they were its victims, they were its accomplices. That they tolerated Nazism before it was inflicted on them, that they absolved it, shut their eyes to it, legitimized it, because until then it had only been applied to non-European peoples, that they have cultivated that Nazism and that they are responsible for it, and that before engulfing the whole of Western Christian civilization in its reddened waters, it oozes, seeps, and trickles from every crack." Wow. amazing writing from 1955, and it basically, I would say, sums up Canadian American society, North American society, the whole West in general, all right. The nations that have participated in colonial projects, all the countries that currently exploit other countries on top of their own, as well as not only exploiting just the workers of the country that are their same skin color, but also the indigenous people in really sick and depraved ways, just like we do in Canada every day. The most common cause of death for an indigenous woman is getting beaten to death, so that's how we treat indigenous women here. And what I really took away from that is that you can't wait for it to go away. You can't just shut your eyes because before it victimizes you, the colonizer, which is, you know, regular people of Canada, unfortunately, we are living on unceded and stolen land. And that's the reality of it all. And then as we continue to act barbarically towards non-whites, you know, the way that we treat indigenous people, the way we treat black people, the way that we even treat landed immigrants from India, Pakistan, and the small amount of Syrians that have taken up massive amounts of attention, we're inflicting that upon them. And then whilst doing that, it will then eventually come back to us, because it's Nazism, fascism is at the end of the line. So we're still, you know, we're still exploiting the people that don't look just like us. We're not exploiting white men right now, but it's going to get to that. And it's because of the way that we act. Ajit, what do you think? I think that it will, you know, you reap what you sow. And if we're going to act like this, to say that it's beyond our means to happen to us is, I think, absurd.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree. I don't think we should go with any line of thought which thinks that, you know, this shouldn't happen with us. I mean, we get daily examples, and as we're going to go through in this episode, you know, it's already here. You know, this is kind of the point we've been making the whole time. Just maybe another point on the fact that, white men have been affected. It's kind of funny. They just, you know, the ones at the top haven't. But, you know, obviously the most exploited workers have been the white workers because, and I mean that, not that, you know, their conditions are worse than, let's say, how you would treat a minority, but in the fact that they've been here the longest and, you know, they've been, you know, here since Industrial Revolution. And it's funny, I guess Nazism, it's some sort of form of populist ideology. You know, it goes along with it because it distracts them from, you know, the root causes of what their issues are. You know, like, it tells them, you know, let's place the blame on those who you believe are subconsciously less than you just because they're different skin color or whatnot, just so, you know, you become ignorant or, you know, you just willfully disregard your current working state, which you absolutely despise.
Because it's not happening to you right now.
Right.
Like, things have always been bad, yes, but it's not that bad right now relative to the others. So it's not understanding that it will come back and that working peoples that are being oppressed by capitalism need to be on the same page.
Right.
You know, and I think that's just completely lost on our society currently. So, but in even worse news, we need to talk about Brazil. So Brazil, largest, most populous country in South America, it recently had an election, and 55% of the vote went to far right politician Jair Bolsonaro. Jair Bolsonaro is a fascist. We discussed what fascism was and what the nine signs to look for are. And we're going to look through these quotes put together by Maham Abedi from Global News. This was put in an article posted October 29th. It's the title is Brazil's Controversial Incoming President on Dictatorships, Gay Rights, and Rape. So, Jair Bolsonaro, 66, former Congress member with a history of making divisive remarks. This is his quote. I would not rape you because you don't deserve it. He said this while speaking to Brazilian Congresswoman Maria do Rosario in 2014. Bolsonaro said that he would not sexually assault her because she was not worthy enough. When do Rosario again walked out of the national legislature upon hearing the comments, he said, stay here and listen. Bolsonaro later repeated his comments to the Zero Hora newspaper, adding that he was not a rapist, but if he were, he would not rape do Rosario because she is ugly and, quote, not his type. Bolsonaro is slated to stand trial on charges of slander and incitation to rape for these comments. Another quote. I won't fight against it nor discriminate, but if I see two men kissing each other on the street, I'll beat them up. In May 2002, Bolsonaro threatened gay people after then-President Fernando Henrique Cardoso was seen in a photo holding a rainbow flag at an event in support of gay marriage. This is just one homophobic comment he has made over the years. He said in an interview with Playboy magazine in December 2011 that he would, quote, he would be incapable of loving a homosexual son. Another quote, the Congress today is useless. Let's do the coup already. Let's go straight to the dictatorship. In 1999, Bolsonaro said the country's Congress, quote, doesn't work, and that if he was elected president, he would perform a coup the same day. He said he favors dictatorships over democracies. He also added in the 1999 interview that elections don't change anything and only civil wars are effective. Quote, ultimately, it will only change on the day that we break out in civil war here and do the job that the military regime didn't do, killing 30,000. If some innocent people die, that's fine. In every war, innocent people die. Quote, I have five children. Four are men, and then in a moment of weakness, the fifth came out a girl. In a speech at Rio de Janeiro's Hebraica Club in April 2017, Bolsonaro spoke about his family. Beyond these comments raising concerns, Bolsonaro's campaign promises have also raised questions. The president-elect said he will reinstitute the death penalty, empower police to kill suspects, tear up environmental regulations, and rescue the country from political corruption through a military-inspired approach to governing. He said, quote, we cannot continue flirting with socialism, communism, populism, and leftist extremism. Bolsonaro said in his acceptance speech, we are going to change the destiny of Brazil. Bolsonaro will take over as president of South America's most populous country on January 1st. Ajit, any thoughts on those quotes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think this guy's just like the living embodiment of what it means to be a crap human being. Like
maybe a fascist human being?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, he checks it all off. I just want to say, you know, a guy who can just so liberally speak or say such things, you know, like, oh, he would be fine. He would, you know, pretty much admitting that he's fine with rape. How can you deny the fact that this guy probably hasn't committed such sort of sexual assaults on a rampant basis already? You know, the fact that he's fine with beating up gays, I'm sure, you know, this is just a hypothesis, but I'm sure this guy has played some role in facilitating, you know, gay bashing in whatever sort of capacity he's had. You know, I'm sure.
Yeah, just to interject, I'm gonna guess that you're 100% right, because Bolsonaro, he was part of the military dictatorship. He was part of the coup that ran the country for decades.
Right.
So.
Oh, then it's a fact.
And sure. And then he even tortured Dilma Rousseff, his opponent in Brazilian Congress. So to say that he's not capable of these things or he's not serious. Right. No, he was part of this military dictatorship that he fawns over.
Right. Oh, well, then it's already past the fact then. It's just truth. And the other thing I wanted to say, the reason he says these things is there is a large segment of his population which resonates with this stuff. Unfortunately, a lot of the time it's the much poorer. Maybe communities in the rural areas, because Brazil, you know, like every other society, it's built on inequality, you know, like people despise rich elites. And that's kind of interesting, maybe drawing a parallel to the fact that, you know, this congresswoman, you know, she's clearly very powerful, intelligent, whatever. And the fact that he attacked her so personally, he knew it would resonate with a large segment of his supporters, especially the males. And, you know, I can draw a parallel, you know, to Trump saying lock her up, right? Those,
yes.
His core, you know, they despise women elitist maybe the most. You
yeah,
know?
There is another level of hatred of women that happens right. As part of fascism, and right. It will come. Doesn't matter if I saw videos of females. Female voters very happy about Bolsonaro's victory, and it's unfortunate.
It's
really sad because, like, even though you cast a vote for him, you don't deserve to die.
No,
you don't deserve the violence that's coming your way. And I'm at a loss for words. I mean, if the we ran through these quotes just so we can get into this CBC article, so we can check in on what our state media has to say about. About this election, so we're going to take a short break for commercials and we'll be right back.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass renovictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory. I'm your host, Spencer Latu, and I'm with my co-host, Ajit.
Hello, hello.
And we're going to be looking at an article by Chris Arsenault of CBC News, posted October 26th. Hopefully everyone got a chance to look at this, because this is some next level cognitive dissonance from our beautiful, well, very overfunded state media that is going to tell you some really disgusting things. So we ran through a few things that Bolsonaro said. He said he won't rape somebody only because they're too ugly and they don't deserve his rape. He said that he would beat up gay people for kissing on the street, and he's advocating for a military dictatorship. So that's who Bolsonaro is. So let's see what Chris Arsenault has to say about Bolsonaro. This is an article from the CBC. The title is "What a Far-Right Bolsonaro Presidency in Brazil Means for Canadian Business." Miners could benefit from relaxed regulations as environmentalists fear growth plans will destroy the Amazon. For Canadian business, a Bolsonaro presidency could open new investment opportunities, especially in the resource sector, finance, and infrastructure, as he has pledged to slash environmental regulations in the Amazon rainforest and privatize some government-owned companies. Quote, "It could be good. It could be a good time to be a mining investor in Brazil," said Ana Prusa, a former U.S. State Department official who now researches Brazil at the Wilson Center, a Washington, D.C.-based think tank. Bolsonaro has said pretty publicly he would like fewer restrictions. He is a recent convert to market liberalism. Notable investments by Canadian firms in Brazil include Brookfield Asset Management, a Toronto-based property and infrastructure company with more than $40 billion invested in South American giants' shopping malls, homes, and oil pipelines, according to Reuters. Okay, so we're going to take a short break from the article there. So we've just talked about how great it is for business, and there's really... What do you think? Are you going to be putting your money into Brazil, knowing that it's run by a fascist that doesn't care about the environment and will cut down the Amazon rainforest in a time where climate catastrophe is on the horizon?
I mean, it's just disgusting. Like, I don't mean to jump ahead in the article, but I don't know if it gets mentioned, but I believe scientists, you know, they call the Amazon rainforest the lungs of the earth. And I think that's just such a telling analogy, the fact that, you know, like, we've already been comparison. It's like we're already smoking a bunch of cigarettes a day, let's say, in terms of how deforestation is going to the Amazon. At this point, you're just going to be burning your lungs. Like, you know, just put the lighter.
We're killing the lungs of ourselves, basically. Right, we're like, oh, you know what's good for our lungs? We should sell them off to the highest bidder.
Right.
That's a really smart way. It's basically an organ harvest. Yeah, an organ harvest. Right. That's a, you know, we got quite the metaphor going on over here. Yeah, and I would also like to say that Ana Prusa, wow. The first thing you could think about with Bolsonaro is what it means to be a mining investor. Like, you disgusting scumbag. U.S. State Department official, of course. You know, you're done being an imperialist, so you go and work for the imperialist think tank to help future imperialists do their thing. So that's who you are. You're a horrible person. I'll just say that flat out. And I'll say it to her face, too. Hopefully she comes by the show and we'll ask about it. Back to the article. Bolsonaro's victory is not expected to radically alter trading relations, says Dodlin, but Canadian companies in mining, agriculture, and infrastructure could see new opportunities if Paulo Guedes, Bolsonaro's chief economic advisor, is given full control over investment policy. Holding a PhD in economics from the University of Chicago, Guedes has pushed for a wave of privatizations across Brazil's state-dominated, highly regulated economy. He helped rally the country's initially skeptical business class behind Bolsonaro, whose own economic leanings are thought to hue closer to Latin Americans' past military leaders, favoring state intervention in the economy and control over what they consider strategic energies, strategic sectors like energy. Bolsonaro's pledge to open new land to agriculture will mean more competition for Canadian farmers on global markets. Before we get back to that, so we have a University of Chicago economist. Right. They are the classic school of thought that gave birth to neoliberalism,
right.
Gave birth to Reaganism, gave birth to voodoo economics, as George H.W. Bush called it, or as Reagan liked to call it, trickle-down economics, which was, if we just don't tax rich people, poor people will get rich somehow. And that was a complete failure. Privatize everything, because things that were affordable for the public should no longer be affordable, and instead there should be a profit made off of those things, and that's the way that Brazil is going. So as horrible as Brazil is going right now, which is bad,
right.
It's really bad, it's going to get worse. And with these economic policies, it's merely going to enrich the richest people, the people that are reading this article and salivating,
right.
And thinking about how much money they can make. They're very happy, but the poor people who already had no social services will even have less. So is there less than zero social spending for Brazil?
Right.
Ajit, any thoughts before we go on?
Well, I mean, it's just like you said, it's a total fluff piece to the investors. Like, what does the average Canadian really have to concern? We don't mine anything in Canada anymore, really. Costs are too high. I doubt Canadian
those pesky
workers,
regulations keep the kids out of the mines.
Right,
thank
socialism
God.
Again.
Oh, socialism getting in the way of business, keeping those children out of the mines.
Right.
Oh, if only they could open up the market and deregulate. Right. That would really help things, huh?
Right, right. Oh. Just a funny aside, thinking of trickle-down economics, I think what it really means are the elites are pissing on everybody else.
Yeah, it's right. Basically, it's like the only thing that's trickling down is their bodily fluids on, right. On all of us. So back to the article. Bolsonaro's pledge to open new land to agriculture will mean more competition for Canadian farmers on global markets. Bolsonaro has pledged to open more of the Amazon to farming, mining, and hydroelectric dams. He won significant backing from rural lawmakers who say Brazil's rules on deforestation and land management are too onerous for business. Brazil is in the unique position of having a lot of land left that could be turned into farmland, Prusa, the ex-State Department shill, said. We expect production to increase in Brazil. Toronto-based Belo Sun Mining Corporation, for example, has been embroiled in a long-running licensing fight over a major gold mining project in the Amazon after Brazilian regulators said the company hadn't properly consulted with local indigenous communities. This is the kind of dispute where Bolsonaro has said he favors economic growth over environmental protection. With nearly 60% of the world's public mining companies listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange, losses for the Amazon rainforest under Bolsonaro could spell big gains! Big gains, people, for Canadian investors. Hey, that's sure. The end of the article. We got a lot to say about that. But can we address, before we get to that piercing last line, we can talk about it again. Chris Arsenault, what kind of horrible person are you to get paid with our tax dollars
right.
to write about how this is a good moment for business?
Right.
We're destroying the last thing that could possibly save us from climate catastrophe, from us all dying of brutal forest fires, especially in BC, because we know when the temperature goes up 2 degrees, those forest fires are going to get even worse.
Oh, absolutely.
And all you can think about is making a buck. Well, there's no bucks to be made when we're all dead. Okay, Chris, wake up. Sorry, please go, Ajit.
Right. No, short-term gains shouldn't outweigh long-term survival. I think that's common sense 101. But then again, we don't live in a common sense age anymore. The other hypocrisy I want to highlight, if this guy, you know, Bolsonaro, was a Canadian politician saying this stuff, there would be a complete national moral outrage. Like, we would not have this. This guy would be a pariah. He would be expelled. He would resign, probably.
Trump said less. Trump right. has said less.
Right.
Which is just so screwed up.
Exactly. And like, but we can only, you know, I think this goes back to the neocolonial point, you know, because it's a different country, because it's, we view it as less developed. We view it as composed ethnically and just, you know, societally, it operates on a different playing field because it's what we would categorize, you know, maybe a few decades ago as a developing country, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just sheer hypocrisy, right? Why isn't the CBC calling this guy out for being a fascist, misogynist, sexist
who's going
scumbag?
To execute right. people, 30,000 people, including innocents.
Right.
He said it himself.
Yes.
And you're worried about the money that could be made.
I think one explanation possibly for this could be maybe Trudeau government. You know, they've gotten a large degree of backlash, especially their foreign affairs office, from, you know, espousing the type of humanitarian ideals that they do, even though we don't...
Humanitarian, like, right. Sorry to cut you off right. there, but for the record, these humanitarian things that people are upset about
right.
do not address... anything close to the horrible right. lives they live,
right.
the horrible material relations that they deal with every day. He's just saying, like, Trudeau went around saying, we just shouldn't brutally kill people anymore. Right. When we exploit them, we should exploit them like we do in Canada with a less than living minimum wage.
Right.
And that was too much for these business people. But go on. Right. Sorry for cutting you off.
No, not at all. That's exactly what I was going to say. You know, it's just rhetoric at this point. And it was always really, you know, it was always about conducting business. But, you know, the fact that you even see this greater withdrawal for not just, I feel, you know, Trudeau would have definitely called this guy out if he was a bit more confident in his abilities. But, you know. Oh, well, I think that's
why would he call him out, though? Bellow Sun Mining Corp won't be giving that campaign money that they love to the Liberal Party if he says that. Right. Let's see who else they named. Brookfield Asset Management. I wonder how much they put into the Canadian politics. These people are criminals.
Right.
They look at this fascist and they're like, dollar signs, you know, cash out. Let's make some more money. Let's put some oil pipelines because you know how unpopular they are at home, but we can jam them through in Brazil. Let's put in some more shopping malls that only rich people can enter, and then right. we'll kick out all the homeless people. When the homeless people go in there to, I don't know, get some shelter for a few hours, we're going to go harass them. They're just creating an even worse society with not, and we, and the worst thing about it is we had Chris Arsenault paid with our tax dollars right. to write right. this crap.
Stings the most.
This sociopathic shit. It's just next level. And then we just need to say one more time, this is going to be my quote of the century and why I will never be happy with the CBC. Losses for the Amazon rainforest under Bolsonaro could spell big gains for Canadian investors. How could you think like that?
Right. I mean, that's the thesis of his article, right?
It's good, yeah. No, well, it's you know, those environmentalist fear growth plans will destroy the Amazon. Yeah, no, because you explicitly said that that's what they're going to do.
Right.
Like the lungs of humanity have not already been destroyed enough by you crazy, sociopathic, horrible investors. Like, is an investor not a human now? Like, you know, we all need air to breathe. And right. if the Amazon isn't, I don't know, being the massive carbon sink that it is, right. do investors not need air? Have they privatized their own air?
Right. It will invade in a second if our oil supply is threatened, but, you know, oh, oxygen, hey, that's, you know, that's always available, right? No.
And if we take just a quick look at South American, Latin American history. So, when has the U.S. invaded? Fascists, like Bolsonaro, Trump tweeted congratulating him. So it's nice to see that he's shouting out the guy. Right. Are you surprised, though, Ajit?
No.
Right? Okay. Now, say that we have a radical socialist government elected to power or redistributing land so that maybe 10% of landowners don't own 90% of the land.
Right.
Let's send in the Marines. That's what the United States said. The United States has invaded basically every single country that's attempted
that's ever gone, yeah.
a socialist experiment in Central America, the Caribbean, and South America.
Right. If not directly invaded, they've co-opted the mm-hmm. results.
So we have the Iran-Contra scandal right. dealing with Nicaragua. We have El Salvador. Yeah, I was about to get to Chile. So thank you for bringing up Chile. So when they have a democratically elected Chilean socialist government, what do? They fund Henry Kissinger funds a coup. To put in a military dictatorship, just like Bolsonaro wants,
that
killed thousands of people.
In the most disgusting ways possible.
Tortured people. Right. Threw them out of helicopters. That's what leftists can expect from this government. And thank God the CBC, using our money that we pay for, are talking about the investors. That's not who I'm concerned with, CBC.
Right.
Oh, yeah, because you don't write this for us. You don't write this for the people. This isn't the people's newspaper. This is a Canadian Broadcasting Company, okay? Right. And we broadcast to the people that make all the money here. We're broadcasting to the people, to the oligarchs of Canada. And we need to let them know that this is where you need to invest next.
Right.
Because they don't care about the Amazon rainforest. And when you think that for a second that, oh, this is just Brazil's problem. The Amazon is for all of us. We need that to breathe.
Right.
There will be too much carbon dioxide in the air if there isn't carbon sinks like the Amazon to take that out of the air, people. Right. This is an international issue.
Absolutely.
This should be an international problem because internationally, we're not going to be able to deal with climate change. We're not going to be able to take the carbon out fast enough.
No.
It's and then this guy's going on about the investors.
Right. It's just...
Do you have no integrity left? is it really that hard to be a... Is it really that hard to be a journalist that you have to write horrible, literal shit? It's he got defensive on Twitter and called people out for not reading the article. Oh, Chris, don't worry, we read the article.
Right.
We're even more mad than before because your headline: "What a far-right Bolsonaro presidency in Brazil means for Canadian business. Miners could benefit from relaxed regulations as environmentalists fear growth plans will destroy the Amazon." That was horrible.
Right.
That headline was just terrible. You completely misdiagnose the problem. You completely misdiagnose what the real story is. The real story is that fascism is in South America, and it is growing, and it will wipe out the people, but also the Amazon.
And it's even more telling of his position that the fact that he doesn't even mention, even briefly, any inkling of the sense of this guy's background, right? He just, isn't that misinformation?
Yeah, well, he puts in there that they're worried about his homophobic statements. Obviously, he doesn't go into any real detail about how horrible he is. I mean, I picked out some choice moments from there that were just so blatant. And if you read the whole article, you know, he talks about how Bolsonaro, you know, he's a far right candidate, and that he said some crazy things, but he's just going, like, the bulk of this is just about what the investment opportunities are. Like, the investment opportunities should be in, I don't know, a concerted effort in solidarity with the Brazilian people to not only change their material conditions in Brazil so that they're not scared, they're not so scared they vote for a far-right fascist.
Right.
Shouldn't that be what we should be doing with all our money instead of building a frickin' pipeline that nobody wants? No, instead we're going to let the oligarchs, who have billions of dollars... This Brookfield Asset Management, they've got the Toronto-based property and infrastructure with more than $40 billion invested in South America.
Oh, they got a huge...
$40 billion invested in South America, $0 to the people.
Right. I think a better title would have been Brutal Sociopathic Leader equals The Ticker Keeps on Ticking on Bay Street.
I love that. We'll have to send an email to CBC. I don't know. I'm really tempted to respond because they're forced to read every Canadian that responds to these.
Right.
And I just want to say I wanted to get this fascist sympathizer. Imagine if somebody wrote an article like this. Ooh, Hitler's rise in Germany will be great for Canadian business. What is wrong with you?
Literally. That's
what is wrong with you?
Right.
You sick fuck.
Oh, but you can't rate Stalin though.
Oh my god. Like, it's just unbelievable. What kind of... Oh my god.
Hitler.
It's like, oh, yay Hitler, good for business. Like, people wake up, business is on the side of fascism. Like, what is this? Like, oh my god. Just with our last little bit of time, I want to retroactively give some context. Brazil was run by the Labor Party, or PT, by very influential leader Lula da Silva. He was a true working man, brought millions out of poverty in Brazil. He was a social democrats, liberal reformer kind of guy. Not my cup of tea ideologically. However, he did make actual progress for people, and that should never be forgotten. He did help people. However, his help was not enough. His help, although it was great, and he was such a threat to Bolsonaro and the ruling class of Brazil that they concocted this crazy conspiracy to about corruption in Brazil, and Lula currently is in prison, which is why he didn't win the election, because they locked up Lula. And while Lula was great and what's happening to him is unjust, at the end of the day, liberal reforms under global capitalism, also known as the global oppression of working peoples, will always result in this. There is no way out other than radical change. There cannot be the bourgeoisie, because with them comes the threat of fascism. Until the world rids themselves of this horrible class of human beings that write in CBC about how great it is for their own class interests, while they put working people with basically putting a gun to their head and putting the environment under complete duress, that is what fascism will bring. That is what capitalism will inevitably end up in. And regardless of the liberal reformers and the social democrats and all those people that really try to help, and I know they're genuine in their attempts to help, it's not enough people. It won't stop them. You need to take the economic system that gives them this power away from them forever. Because without it, we're going to deal with this eventually in Canada. We're going to have to take a short break for commercials, but stick around and we'll be talking more about fascism.
So you're a member of CITR and Discorder. But are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts in Kitsilano and around UBC at
On the Fringe Hair Design, Rufus Guitar Shop, Stormcrow Ale House, The Bike Kitchen, UBC Bookstore, Australia Boot Company, and so many more.
One way that old clunker is going to make you feel good again. Donate it to Bullying Canada. Check this out. Free towing or pickup of your old vehicle. A tax-deductible receipt. And a super easy process. Online at bullyingcanada.ca. Get rid of that old vehicle and feel good about supporting real solutions for change in your community. Donate your old or used vehicle to Bullying Canada today. Full details online at bullyingcanada.ca.
Articles. What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory. I'm with my co-host Ajit.
What's up?
I'm your host, Spencer Latu, and we're back. We were just discussing fascism and the rise of Hitler in Brazil, I mean Bolsonaro, and we talked about our CBC's own Chris Arsenault talking about how great this is for Canadian business. So it's nice to see that business is on the side of fascism yet again in history. So That's where we're at. It's unfortunate, and my prayers, thoughts, and solidarity is with all those people there. He's declared a war on leftists, so that is my personal ideology, as well as many others in there, and they will unfortunately face the brutal realities of what a military dictatorship is capable of, and there will be lives lost, and Chris Arsenault will go down as talking about business before people. So profits come before people under capitalism, which is why we are for socialism here at the Spencer Lodge Show, because we believe, crazy, I know, super Red Scare, crazy ideas, that people are more important than profits.
Right.
What a crazy idea. So over this weekend, I'm sure we've all seen the news. We're going to cover it from maybe a different lens than what you might have heard on television. We're going to be talking about the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting. We're going to be talking about the Kentucky Kroger shooting, and we're going to be talking about the mega pipe bomber. So I'm going to pass this over to my co-host Ajit to kind of fill us in with some details about these three incidents.
Right, just some quick details on each event and maybe some background information as well. This first article by CNN, it's titled, "The Pittsburgh Synagogue Shooting is Believed to Be the Deadliest Attack on Jews in American History." It's by Jay Croft and Saeed Ahmed. It reads, "The shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, in which the death toll now stands at 11, is believed to be the deadliest attack on the Jewish community in the history of the U.S., the Anti-Defamation League says, which is an advocacy group for Jewish civil rights, I believe. The ADL said the attack Saturday comes at a time when both anti-Semitic incidents and online harassment are on the rise. Jewish people were the victims of more reported hate crimes than any other religious minority in 2016, according to the most recent research of FBI statistics." Maybe kind of telling that it started in that year, kind of a rise.
Who'd have thought?
Right. In that year, 684 anti-Jewish incidents were reported. And then, you know, the guy who committed this outrageous crime. Robert Bowers, 46, faces 29 charges in all, including 11 counts of using a firearm to commit murder and multiple counts of two hate crimes. Bowers told a SWAT officer that he wanted all Jews to die and also that Jews were committing genocide to his people. That's according to CNN affiliate WTAE. And then another fact was last year, the ADL reported anti-Semitic incidents rose almost 60%, the largest single increase on record. So there's a disturbing trend of it going up. And a spokesperson from the ADL said, we're definitely in a period in our country where there's a general decrease in civility. His name is Arya Tuchman. He's associate director for the ADL Center on Extremism. Just quickly before I continue on with other stuff, that's kind of an understatement, you know,
Civility. That's definitely the problem. When the guy said all Jews should die, he wanted all Jews to die.
Right.
Oh, if only he could civilize that statement a little bit more.
Oh, absolutely. He just, you know, having a bad day, I guess, civility.
He's having an uncivil day, which was 11 dead.
Right.
That's not civility, people.
Right, and like, I don't know, I find it kind of strange, you know, at the same breath you say it's the worst attack on on the Jewish community in American history, but then you say it can be accounted for a decrease in civility because of, you know, the outrageous rhetoric coming from the White House.
Or maybe we have fascism on the rise at home.
Right.
Sounds like this guy sounded like very sympathetic to the Nazi cause.
Absolutely. And quickly, on the other two incidents, this was titled Man Who Killed Two at Kroger Tried to Enter a Predominantly Black Church Minutes Earlier, Police Say. This is by the Philadelphia Tribune, posted October 26th, and it's by Faith Karima. And it reads, a white man who allegedly killed two people at a Kroger grocery store in Kentucky tried to enter a predominantly black church nearby minutes before the fatal shooting. Police said the two people killed Wednesday, Maurice Stillard and Vicky Jones, were shot in the grocery store and the parking lot, respectively. CNN affiliate WDRB described both victims as black. Police arrested suspect Gregory A. Bush, 51, shortly after the shooting, which happened in the Louisville suburb of Jeffersontown. A church member sitting in the parking lot saw the suspect banging on and pulling the door, trying to get inside, the affiliate reported. Quoted, to think that an hour and a half earlier, we had 70 people in the church, end quote. Church administrator Billy Williams told the affiliate. But by the time he came through, all doors were locked, and there were probably 8 or 10 still in the building. When Bush was unable to enter the church, he went to Kroger and opened fire in the store, killing Stillard, police said. The suspect then fled the store and shot a second victim, Jones, 67, in the parking lot, according to authorities. And just one final very sad fact was that Stillard was at the store with his 12-year-old grandson buying a poster board for the boys' school project when he got shot. His grandson ran out of the store screaming for help, reported a witness. I mean, that just completely breaks me. That just kills me. I mean, I have a grandpa, I'm sure, you know, for those of us who are lucky to have one. I mean, you know, like, nobody deserves to see any of this, but just this scenario, I don't know, it just hit me on a personal level, and it just absolutely heartbreaking. And, you know, one final quick thing on the mega bomber. I'll go quickly through this. His name is Caesar Soyak. He's 56, and he was previously known to law enforcement officials and had been arrested nearly a dozen times in Florida, including a 2002 arrest for making a bomb threat. The packages, which he sent to people who were highly critical of Trump, some more so than others.
Or part of far-right conspiracy theories.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's no more. All the packages were intercepted, but some of his targets included George Soros, who's a rich billionaire, Democratic donor, the Clintons, Obama, CNN, and John Brennan, who I think is an affiliate, Eric Holder, people of the Democratic establishment like Maxine Waters,
Debbie Wasserman Schultz,
right? And Robert De Niro. You know, even Hollywood isn't safe. I mean, when were they ever? But yeah,
Cory Booker, and I'm just going to shout out to the last one, Maxine Waters. So, for the people who don't know, Maxine Waters, she is a righteous fighter. Was the only congresswoman to vote against, guess the bill, the Patriot Act.
No.
Only congresswoman, because they tried to jam that down everyone's throat the day after 9/11.
Right.
And she stood there crying and voted against it because she knew what was going to happen, that everyone's rights were going to be taken away completely.
Right.
And the fact that she did that, I think, says that she's more patriotic than any of those people on that list.
Oh, definitely.
She stood in the face of the worst mass surveillance ever to hit America.
Right.
And she said no. So I...
Props to her.
I really do. Yeah, snaps for Maxine Waters. And I pray that we can have more Maxine Waters in this world. So these have been all over the news, and we try to keep it real and try to not focus on the classic 24 hours, 7 days a week news network material. And the only reason we are is because we can draw a straight line through all these three.
Right, right.
And the straight line we're going to draw is that this is the rise of fascism. This is the eventual byproduct of what happens when you deprive people of a decent existence in America. Most people don't have $1,000 in savings. Most people are wage laborers making around 30K or less. And that doesn't account for the possible double digits worth of unemployment, the homelessness crisis, the opioid crisis, amongst other things affecting working peoples. So when somebody posts on YouTube a conspiracy theory about how the Democrats are conspiring to screw over working people, and George Soros is a part of it, what part of it is wrong? That the Democrats are creating a trying to bring in refugees to wipe out white people? Yeah, that part's crazy. But you know what's not wrong is that the people in power are letting people down. That's true.
Right.
And so that when these people feel so disaffected, rather than write them off as crazy, and I will write off Caesar Sayoc, Greg Bush, and Robert Bowers. They're crazy. They acted on this, and they had a choice, and they chose to act on their hate.
Right.
But to not understand where this hate is coming from is to be willfully ignorant of how bad the situation is. Furthermore, these people are on the front line, these people specifically, and not, I'm not speaking for white working class people, because there are many, many very agreeable white working class people that are hurting and are turning to the first person that will give them a solution, which is generally a conspiracy theory, which is Donald Trump, which is Bolsonaro, which is all these right wing figures they don't have a solution to their problems, but they promise one. Right. And that's better than what the Democrats can do, or the center left parties and the status quo has ever done for them. And that is why they're going to them. And I want to make that point explicitly clear. However, these people are fascists. Donald Trump is not a fascist in the same way that Bolsonaro is. He's not a fascist definition. However, he elicits fascist sympathies. And what we're going to see more of is this hatred of Jews and of black people.
Right.
There was a eyewitness that said that Greg Bush, the Kentucky Kroger shooter that murdered a grandfather and another person, the eyewitness recounts the shooter saying, "Whites don't kill whites." That's where we're at, people. To these disaffected and to these that have been raised in our colonial society, in our hierarchical capitalist society, they're at the breaking point. They are now exhibiting the worst parts of our society that we've endorsed. Because whites don't kill whites. We don't go to war against white people. We go to war against brown people. We go to war against black people. Right. We demonize Jews. We don't talk about the problems in America that are built into capitalism.
Right.
So when these people finally lose it, and they see that their privileges and their place in the social hierarchy are challenged by quote-unquote progress and quote-unquote diversity, they react. And this is how they're going to react, with bullets and blood and terror attacks, the likes of which people have never seen. This is the largest terror attack made on Jewish people explicitly because they're Jewish.
Right.
This is where we're at, people. And the mainstream media is not going to admit that.
No.
They're not going to tell you that it is this bad. They're not going to recognize the fascist in Brazil that just got elected. They're not going to recognize the fascist people that are committing crimes in America. They're not going to talk about Alexandre Bissonnette, radicalized by Ben Shapiro videos, right-wingers, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump. They're not going to talk about the Swedish Democrats getting 35% of the vote. The Swedish Democrats are the equivalent to the Nazi Party. You're not going to talk about Marine Le Pen. You're not going to talk about the German Nazi problem that they have. Yes, Germany has another Nazi problem, because this is global. It's not going to be just here or there, or it's just random. This is the inevitable late stages of capitalism.
Right.
We're currently on collision course for the worst bloodshed ever seen by humanity. You thought the Holocaust was bad? Did you really? Did you really think it couldn't get any worse? Well, here it is. We have the precursor to it right now in front of your face. You can't deny it. You saw it. We all turned on the news. We know why he killed them, because they're Jewish.
Right.
He had no other reason. He's protecting his people. Who are his people? Privileged white men. He's there to uphold a system, and he knows. He can see that. He can see it's challenged. That capitalism has nothing left for these white men other than their positioning in the social hierarchy. And when that is even challenged, they're going to react with horrible violence, and it's going to get worse.
Right.
This is our time to act. This is our time to inform people. Talk to people about this subject matter. Fascism is not a light subject and should never be approached lightly, especially with people who are well aware of World War II. People who've had people that died because of fascism all over this world. But to pretend that it's not happening is playing right into the hands of the fascists.
Right.
And that is why I'm condemning CBC, the mainstream media in general, by not taking this as seriously as we are.
Absolutely.
The fact that these people had to die is absurd. They died because, as a society, we cannot deal with our own internal problems. And our problems are income inequality, alienation of people, the destruction of community. That is what people need. That's what people want. They want meaning in life. They want dignity. They want a real existence. They don't want to go bankrupt because they got sick. They don't want to die in a mass shooting. No one wants to deal with a climate disaster. These people, how hard it is to be these people right now. And I know I don't mean the privileged white men. I mean just everybody in the working class. It can only go one of two ways. The capitalist system is completely bankrupt. We need to provide a socialist alternative, a real left alternative to change people's lives. Because if we don't, it's going to end up with the fascists giving them a promise they know they can't keep. And all the bloodshed and disgusting things that they want to get done, they will do. Ajit, any thoughts?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head multiple times right there. These are economic issues masquerading as racial issues, but they've been intentionally manipulated to be racial issues by the same elites who, you know, control the system because it is extremely beneficial to them, like we said. I mean, these people have lost their place in society, and, you know, they think to find it, you know, you resort, when your back is against the wall, you resort to violence. And these people, I think they're fed up. They're mentally unhinged, a lot of them. You know, technology has allowed us access to a litany of sources, many which are, you know, baseless, put out baseless information. But on top of that, the people, the so-called journalists, which they're clearly not, but mainstream media is putting out baseless stuff too. They're beating around the bush. They're not getting to the core of the issue. You know, they'll exhaust the racial issue because, you know, it creates a good narrative. It creates a good dialogue.
Or they're going to talk about civility.
Right.
No, this is fascism. What do we do with fascists? There's no negotiating with Hitler.
Right.
Everyone's been confronted that. What would you do if you're in a room with Hitler with a gun and a bullet? What are you going to do with Bolsonaro? It's happened again. Thought experiment has become a real experiment.
Right.
And just watch Canadian society do nothing and stand by and watch this happen.
Well, hopefully not.
All the liberals are going to watch this happen, and they're going to ask people to be more civil. There is no time for civility. Thank you all for listening. I hope you all take the fascist threat seriously. You begin organizing in your community because that's all you're going to have. To beat back this, as long as our mainstream politicians and media pundits say nothing on this matter. If you want to listen to this podcast, you can find us on Apple iTunes Podcast. Just check out the Spencer Latu Show. And we'll be back next week. And hopefully the news gets better, but I have a feeling that it will not. So thank you so much for listening, and we will be signing off.
Thanks to sky-high gas prices, we can convince America that more drilling is the answer. High gas prices? Drill more. Prices still high? Try drilling in a wildlife refuge. You're off a nice beach.
Our traditional energy resources are limited. Luckily, it's easy for students like you to conserve energy.
Woke up late for class? Buy some time in the morning by taking a shorter shower. Cut down by 1 minute every day and save enough to fund your daily caffeine fix for over a week. Plus, you save on electricity and water. Install a water-saving showerhead to save even more.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.